Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Sauce of the Scary. Jeff Wright and Derek Zhu back in the studio with you. Jeff, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing okay, bud. It's been a kind of a chill week. Busy, but nothing too crazy. So all things told, I'm doing all right. How about you?
It's been the opposite for me.
Yeah.
But all things considered, I'm doing well.
Well, good deal.
Yeah.
Good deal.
It's been a crazy 7 days, and I'm excited to talk to you about some of the stuff that's going on in the world of horror and pop culture and all that good stuff. But before we get into it, man, let's go to everyone's favorite part of the show.
Jeff hates trailers.
You can edit this part out if you want to, but did you know that last week you put the horror reporter in instead of Jeff H. Trailers?
Oh, no.
I'm listening to it on the way to Illinois, or on the way back from Illinois the other day, and it's everyone's favorite part of the show, bah, 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 this week's horror reporter, and I just cracked up.
I think I will leave this in as an act of public penance.
You truly don't have to, man. It's just when I queued it up, I just remembered that, and I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, well, it is funny. I'll give you that. It's funny. Also mortifying, but funny. Support independent podcasts, y'all.
Yeah, hey, for sure. Anyway, I got a few trailers to talk about. I think some of them coalesce with what you want to talk about with the horror reporter, but I do have a couple right off the bat that don't have anything to do with what we talked about before. The first one I put in our Facebook group, We Saw Something Scary. So if you're not a part of that Facebook group, what in the world are you doing? Pause this episode right now. Go over to your Facebook app, hop on your on Facebook on your computer, and go join the We Saw Something Scary Facebook group.
Best part of Facebook.
By far right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, the first trailer I have is for a movie called Come Play.
Sounds creepy.
Yeah. And here's the synopsis. Oliver is a lonely young boy who feels different from everyone else. Desperate for a friend, he seeks solace and refuge in his ever-present cell phone and tablet. When a mysterious creature uses Oliver's devices against him to break into our world, Oliver's parents must fight to save their son from the monster behind the screen. And this is actually the feature film version of a 2017 short film.
I'll be honest with you, Derek, as a parent of some kids who are getting old enough to see their classmates with smartphones, I feel very seen right now.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I'm interested. I mean, just in the course of my work, I run into people, you know, individuals or parents, and they've got real trouble. And I'm not going to say they're caused by social media or what they're interacting with through their devices, but those devices at a minimum are a catalyst and a force multiplier. And in trying to care for people, when I run into that, the ones who have had real success in reestablishing, you know, however you want to describe it, balance or a healthy life, it's largely connected to those who redefine their relationship with their phone. No kidding. I don't mean that for everybody. Like, I don't think everybody who takes a drink of alcohol is going to become an alcoholic. And I clearly, you know, don't think everybody who has a smartphone is going to become terrorized by it. But it happens more than I would have expected when I first saw the Apple iPhone unveiled.
Yeah.
So anyway, it just sounds, it sounds like timely horror that's kind of doing stuff Jordan Peele does in a little version, you know, smaller version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, man. You know, obviously, I don't have children of my own, but this seems like a pretty neat little concept, and the trailer looked interesting, so I'm excited. And the cool thing is we don't have to wait long for this thing. This comes out on October the 30th of this year.
Oh, sweet. And what did you say it was coming out through? Is it some kind of platform, video on demand?
No, sir. This will be in theaters.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. This is from Amblin Entertainment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it is oriented towards children.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Maybe I'll take my kids to it and say, this is why you don't get a smartphone till you're 45.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I said, the trailers in the Facebook group, I know you hate trailers. Obviously, that's the name of the segment. But I'd tell you to take a look at it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll take that advice.
But I think it's going to be interesting for for parents, and I think it's just going to be a good little movie. It stars Jillian Jacobs and John Gallagher Jr., and I have no idea who the child is. Apparently, he was in Marriage Story.
Oh, yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah. I purposefully missed that one.
Yep. Same here. Now, my wife watched it, and she said it's depressing and nihilistic, but that the acting was really good and that ScarJo's never been better.
I'm going to beg to differ on that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I don't think ScarJo's ever been better than she was in Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's a fair point. I think Jojo gets to claim the high ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, I watched that the other day.
Oh, yeah. Again,
and holy smokes, man.
It holds up, man.
It's so good. Go ahead.
Well, I'll let you. Mine is very inconsequential.
Well, I was just going to say it's so good that I went to work the next day, and a couple of my friends are big movie fans, like, you know, you and I are. And they said, they're actually a couple. And they said, hey, what should we watch tonight? And I said, watch Jojo Rabbit. And they came back the next day and they're like, thank you so much for recommending Jojo Rabbit. I said, oh, you're welcome. Don't worry.
Yeah. I think I've watched it 3 times at this point. And when Rebel Wilson says, I can't remember, they're looking for like a chore or a menial job for the kid to do. And she's like, do you want to walk the clones? And there's just a pile of kids over here that look exactly the same.
Yeah.
I don't know why that joke works so well, but it slays me every time.
That's so good. Sam Rockwell, man. He's so good. Movie.
For sure.
I think I told you, maybe off air, I don't remember, but I walked out of that movie and I texted a friend of mine and I said, I think Sam Rockwell just became like my favorite actor after this one. Like RDJ and, you know, The Rock are like my favorite celebrities. And I still feel like that Robert Downey Jr. is probably one of, if not the greatest actor of this generation. But Sam Rockwell, man, that guy does no wrong ever.
I am very glad to co-sign that it, you know, it was billboards. Was it 3 billboards outside Ebbing that really locked that in for me that, you know, I don't know if he's favorite or what, but among the very few best actors of his generation. And by that, I mean 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I don't think it's contestable at this point. That guy just kills every time they point a camera at him.
Yeah. He's so good. Now, speaking of which, man, we got to review that Poltergeist that he was in.
Yeah, I'm up for that. And we're coming up on some milestone numbers. I thought Poltergeist, the original, might be a good one for, you know, episode 150. That being next, we could do old Poltergeist for 150 and new Poltergeist for 151. So we've got some options.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. So anyway, to get back to what we were talking about, Come Play. Out in theaters on October the 30th. Another trailer that crossed my path, and this isn't necessarily a horror trailer, but it is something that I think that you and I will both be interested in. Netflix's Enola Holmes. Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm, no.
Okay, so Enola Holmes is going to be a Netflix movie that drops this month, September the 23rd, and the synopsis for it is this. England, 1884, a world on the brink of change. On the morning of her 16th birthday, Enola Holmes, played by Millie Bobby Brown, wakes to find that her mother, played by Helena Bonham Carter, has disappeared, leaving behind an odd assortment of gifts but no apparent clue as to why she's gone or where she's gone. After a free-spirited childhood, Enola suddenly finds herself under the care of her brothers, Sherlock, played by Henry Cavill, and Mycroft, both set on sending her away to a finishing school for proper young ladies. Refusing to follow their wishes, Enola escapes to search for her mother in London. But when her journey finds her entangled in a mystery surrounding a young runaway, Enola becomes a super sleuth in her own right, outwitting her famous brother as she unravels a conspiracy that threatens to set back the course of history.
Mm, okay. I mean, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. It doesn't sound like it's connected to my horror fixation at all, but it's okay. I can watch other movies every now and then.
Right. But I just thought you got Henry Cavill, Millie Bobby Brown, Sam Claflin is in this from the Hunger Games movies, if you're a fan of those or anybody that's listening. Helena Bonham Carter. I mean, this thing's stacked. I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, and I don't know, something about Henry Cavill playing Sherlock Holmes is something that I was like, yep, I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, that's taken right out of my own thoughts. Great cast, subject material I'm interested in. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trailer looks good.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, okay.
I actually didn't realize it was a movie. I thought it was going to be like a series. But then as I'm doing more research on it, it looks like it's going to be just a movie, which is great because that means less time I have to invest in it.
Are we at a peak Sherlock Holmes moment? I mean, we had the Cumberbatch deal. There was a Lucy Liu series, right?
Yeah, Elementary.
And now we've got this. Is RDJ coming out with a new movie?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
yes.
This is pretty close to Max Sherlock Holmes time. I guess that's...
I believe so.
That's exciting for the fans.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I wish that Sherlock could have kept going, but I mean, you know, Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch are becoming such huge A-list celebrities and actors now that it's difficult to lock them down for, sure, you know, more. But, man, those first few seasons of Sherlock were amazing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I guess that's probably... Well, I mean, I the timeline is muddied in my head. Did Cumberbatch or RDJ come first?
So, I'm pretty sure that the RDJ, the original Sherlock Holmes movie, came out in 2009. And I'm pretty sure that that was before... Yeah, so the BBC TV series Sherlock debuted in 2010.
Okay, all right. So, we have found the origin.
Yeah, so it started... Yeah, it started then, and of course it was like every 2 years you would get new ones for Sherlock. And then so the first Sherlock Holmes movie was in 2009. The second one was in 2011? Yeah, 2011. And hopefully the third one will be next year.
Yeah, okay.
Which is nuts to think that it's been a decade since we've had a Sherlock Holmes movie.
Yeah, it really does feel like, I guess it's just that there is a lot of content, just not movies. But it feels like there's been a movie every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and of course, like those Sherlock episodes are like an hour and a half, so they do feel like a movie.
Yeah, that's accurate.
But yeah, good stuff. So again, Enola Holmes, I hope I'm saying that right, Enola, comes out on September the 23rd exclusively to Netflix. So yet again, Netflix is keeping me from having to cancel because I'm going to watch that movie.
Well, I mean, I guess we threatened to do that last week and then this week reviewed a Netflix movie. So
yeah,
they do have their ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Stupid Netflix. Anyway. Yeah. So we got that. And then, I guess that kind of brings us into, you've got stuff to talk about, and I think that it kind of coincides with what I was going to talk about. So why don't we just jump right into
this week's horror.
That sounds good to me. The thing that I think overlaps is this Scream relaunch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, however, have anything for Bly Manor, if you want to talk about that first.
Yeah, then let's do that. We don't swear on this, but I swore after watching the Bly Manor episode, I pulled a Raymond Holt and said, hot dang.
Oh, that's so good. Of course, I didn't watch the trailer, but I'm just giddy with anticipation at this point.
Yeah. So this thing comes out on Friday, October the 9th. And do you know why that's special?
No.
Because it's like Mike Flanagan just gave me a late birthday present. Because my birthday is 2 days before that.
Yeah, I really feel like if you'd asked me, you know, your birth date, I would have said, oh, because that's your birthday.
Right.
I was assuming there was some kind of Flanagan-verse connection or whatnot. But yeah, that is a late birthday gift. About time Flanagan did something for us.
Yeah. No, it all just comes back to me, man.
I'm on board with everything being about you, number one. But then number two, we've spent years hyping this stuff on this podcast before it was cool to do so. And
yeah,
it's nice to get a little payback.
Yeah, man, I still, the biggest regret I have with this podcast is us not being able to lock down that Flanagan interview when we had the chance. And now I feel like we're too small time for him.
Yeah, I agree. Every now and then I'll just send him the DM again. I'm just going to let him know that I haven't forgotten, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when we had like 45 listeners and we were DMing Mike Flanagan?
And you were interested, Mike, and you were interested.
Yeah. And now we have what, like 10 times that many or 100 times that many, whatever, and can't get him back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, not to the degree, but we have had a statistically comparable rise since then.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, dadgummit, Mike. Sorry, guys, I know you're listening to this. This is just me working through some stuff. I appreciate y'all sitting with me while I do so. It's nice to have friends in this difficult moment.
We got mentioned in the AV club, for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Anyway, so Bly Manor, I'm excited. I'm not going to my love for Mike Flanagan is largely undiminished.
Yeah, yeah. I in no way consider Mike Flanagan to be in the Shudder group, so.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I'm just really excited about this. And I've watched the trailer once, and that's all I'm going to watch. And I'm ready. My body is ready for this.
So I messed up. I'm gonna tell you a personal anecdote, and listeners, you can come right into Failures of Jeff Wright, the new segment on Saw Something Scary. So the other day we were at dinner, and I was just kind of frustrated with the state of the world. I don't mean that to indicate a position or whatnot. That's not what this podcast is about. But I was just kind of frustrated with some things that were a product of the difficulties of 2020. And my kids started talking about at dinner. They started talking about their Halloween costumes, mm-hmm. and I was listening and kind of just muddling in my own thoughts. And one of my kids turned to me and said, "Hey, Dad, could I get XYZ for my costume this year?" And without thinking, I said, "Son, there's not going to be a Halloween this year. People aren't going to go door to door." And his soul died.
Mm.
And I was like, man, what an idiot. You know, just a total parenting fail. And so now I am committed to figuring out a way. I'm not the most creative person in the world, but I'm going to figure out a way for my kids to have a fun Halloween.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can lock Bly Manor in to their Halloween experience, but I can for sure make it fuel for mine. You know, like
yeah.
when I'm going to go, I'm going to figure it out. I don't know what we're going to have to do, but my kids are going to get costumes and they're going to do something fun. I don't know what it is, but anyway. So I am all about anything that fires me up for Halloween this year. Any resource I can draw on to get energy and excitement and then translate that into a way to serve my kids, I am here for it.
Absolutely, man. I wish I was closer. Like I wish I lived closer. I would love to help you out with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons I wish you lived closer, but that would be cool too. It'd be good to have you as a resource, particularly as a guy who's not particularly creative and, you know, friends with a guy like you who is. But anyway, I'm doing it. Listeners, if you've got good ideas, holla at your boy, because I've got some bad dadding to make up for.
Yeah, man. I'm excited.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens with that.
I mean, Flanagan's bulletproof at this point, man. If he came out with an adaptation of, I've probably made this joke before, but an adaptation of Dr. Seuss, I'm like, cool, it's going to be scary and really good. Let's go.
Yeah. Just bring back Rebecca Ferguson and have her be Rose the Hat and a Dr. Seuss. I'd be happy.
That sounds pretty dark and twisted. Maybe we can get we can catch Flanagan on a celebratory night where he's had a few adult beverages and we can get him committed to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if he just do the frickin' podcast. Sorry. I just still got a little bit of resentment.
We're back in the dark place now.
Yeah.
I'm just sucking my thumb and sitting in the fetal position, rocking.
Oh, man. You know what would be fun? It's obviously not going to happen because I don't know when I'm ever going to get a day off again. But, we talked about renting out the local drive-in movie theater in our hometown and doing a couple movies or something. It would be fun to be able to, and I mean, there's no way we can do this without doing it on multiple nights, but doing that, renting out the drive-in and showing this series like two or three episodes every night for like three, you know, however long it takes.
Yeah, that would be dope. I think there's a version of us that in some parallel universe is just agents and promo men.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Bargatze is taking his tour to drive-in theaters, I guess, mm-hmm. this year.
Yeah.
And I was like, gosh, why am I not on his mailing list to like get him into Sparta? Because people would drive from Nashville to see Nate Bargatze to drive in.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Anyway, I know we're a field of horror content, but one of these lifetimes, we're going to get a chance to do all that promo work.
Yeah,
and make people's lives better through it.
Yeah, for sure. You know that Mac Powell was doing that too.
No. Yet again.
Yeah,
Mac Powell. Parallel universe, us get on that.
Yeah, Mac Powell. Who else was it? It was him and two other contemporary Christian guys that I never listened to. Oh, Michael W. Smith and Stephen Curtis Chapman. That's who it was.
Yeah, I have that exact same relationship with him. I know they're high profile, but yeah, never on my radar.
Yeah. And I know that they were in Watertown.
The metropolis. So, Derek, yeah, now here's what we need to do, and we need to involve our listeners here. How do we bring Stephen Curtis Chapman, Nate Bargatze, and put them in the horror of Bly Manor? Because that's the series that I think we are uniquely suited to develop. This is our transition into producers.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk to Nate Bargatze, okay, and I'll see what he, if he has any ideas, and we'll get the ball rolling from there.
Yeah. I wonder if I could reach out to Stephen Curtis Chapman through prayer somehow, like prayer email service. Yeah. It's a different kind of Gmail. Ba-doom, doom, ching.
Hey-o. Well, you know what? Just shut the podcast down. It's not going to get any better than that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff, you tell me if it is.
Okay.
The relaunch of Scream is slashing into theaters on January 14th, 2022. That was an actual headline on Bloody Disgusting written by Brad Miska. And I think he surely feels as ashamed for that as I do about killing my son's dream of Halloween.
I mean, I'm pumped about it. You know, there was a small teaser trailer, but the teaser trailer for it was just the mask, you know, and I think it was like 8 seconds of just the mask. David Arquette shared it. I believe Courtney Cox shared it. You know, so everybody's, it seems like that the trio are back, and that's exciting. And, but it does, I mean, just to be honest with you, it's something that we've talked about several times on this show before. It does worry me that they're going to put it in January.
Sure. January 14th, 2022, y'all, which is not a time when studios release their best, but maybe with it being this far out, they're being strategic about it. I really don't know what to tell you on that front. I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. I know they said it's going to keep canon, and everybody seems really most interested in whether or not Neve Campbell will be coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. That if it's a cameo, cool. But I mean, if they're ever going to have any future with Scream, they're kind of like a professional wrestling promotion. They're going to have to start developing some new talent.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Hayden Panettiere is doing, but if they could get her back, I'd love to see more from her character.
They can't.
So let's do that.
You know that they can't, right? They can't do that.
No, huh?
She's dead.
But man, I mean, they know the tropes of like bringing the person who's dead back. And I'd be okay with it. Come up with some ridiculous explanation that she was brought back by some miracle working doctor somehow. I don't know. I'm just saying that this happens with Jason and all the others. I'm not saying I want an undead Hayden Panettiere, but this has become a silly franchise. Just lean into that and bring her back somehow.
Yeah. Well, they shot themselves in the foot with the last one because you had, what's her name? Emma Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
You had her all lined up to be the next Sydney.
Yeah.
And instead they're like, oh, we got a Russo,
yeah. Yeah, sure.
And they went for the swerve instead of doing what they should have done to stack the franchise.
Yeah.
I think this is how you do it, man. You kill off Sydney like you killed off Alicia Silverstone or Drew Barrymore in the first one.
Oh, a hard break, huh?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, one of the three needs to die immediately for you to be like, oh, okay, here we go. And it seems like that Neve Campbell, no offense to Courtney Cox or David Arquette, which, by the way, while we're on the subject of David Arquette, I want to talk to you about something else here in a second. But it feels like that David Arquette and Courtney Cox are more attached to this thing than Neve Campbell has ever been.
Yeah.
And so it seems like that they will... Not only will they do more movies, but they probably need to do more movies. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. No one's really banging down either one of their doors. And that sucks because they're both very talented. But it just seems like that Neve Campbell doesn't care. And that sucks, too, because I believe I speak for you as well when I say I love me some Neve Campbell. And I wish that we had more of her in present day time.
Yep.
One of the things that made Skyscraper so enjoyable for me was Neve Campbell.
Hmm. Hmm. Didn't even think about that movie when her name came up. But yeah,
well, that's, I know that's that, the I'm sorry. I was just going to say that's the only thing I can remember her doing outside of Scream 4 in the last decade.
Sure. It doesn't seem like she really cares to work all that much, which is her prerogative for sure.
Yeah. And maybe she doesn't have to.
Yeah. I know that I just said who cares about the rules and in world continuity, bring the dead girl back to life and hand the franchise to her. But I do wonder if hardcore Scream fans would be, you know, if they would follow the franchise if Nev's Sydney was brutally murdered. I wonder if there's a way to, like, pull the Russo on that, make it look like she's about to get brutally murdered and then just shuffle her off to the other side of the globe. And she's just never coming back unless it's, like, in a background scene where she visited her hometown.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're agreed that they've got to do something to press on into a future generation rather than just running out the, you know, getting the band back together to sign their gimmicks at the merchandise booth.
Right. You know, if you want to put somebody new in there, get Zoe Dutch and let her be the new Sydney.
Yeah. I mean, there are several talented young ladies who I think you could hand the franchise to. I don't remember her name, but the young lady who plays in Stranger Things, she was the junior newspaper reporter last season. I can't remember her name, but she would be, I think she's got the chops to carry it. Clearly, the young lady playing 11, there's a bunch of people they could hand it off to. They're just going to have to intentionally hand it off.
Yeah, they are. If they do, you know, they may not. It may be another one of those things where it's, hey, this is what we're doing, and Sydney's going to survive. And it's not like I want to see Sydney Prescott die after, you know, being with her for 25 years. But also, for every season, there's a end.
Yeah, and that strategy of just trotting the same people out again, the law of diminishing returns applies, and it gets less special every time. So,
yeah.
I want them to handle it well. I want them to honor, you know, kind of the foundation of the franchise, but they got to move on, man. So,
right.
Anyway, we're going to see if they can January 14th, 2022, if theaters still exist. And I went to see a movie this week, so maybe there's hope they will.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk to you about that too. Real quick, let me piggyback off the David Arquette thing that I mentioned before. I sat down and watched a documentary this week called You Cannot Kill David Arquette.
That's a great title.
And it is mostly about Arquette's transition into becoming a professional wrestler.
Okay.
And it is really good, man.
What platform?
It's on any streaming platform. You're going to have to rent it.
Gotcha.
So it's on like Amazon or Vudu or, you know, wherever you rent your movies.
Yeah.
But man, I think it's worth the $5 to sit down and watch it. Like, as a matter of fact, I'm kind of kicking myself for spending the $5 and not just buying it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. I think it's something that I'll go back and probably purchase at a later date. But again, you know, if you're a fan of David Arquette or if you're a fan of professional wrestling or just that story, I just find that story very compelling. You know, that David Arquette came in to professional wrestling in the year 2000 to promote a movie, you know, called Ready to Rumble, which is low key one of my favorite worst movies of all time. And the writers at the time of WCW decide that, hey, the thing that's going to bring us the most publicity is if we put our world title on David Arquette. And so one day, one random Thunder episode on a Thursday or Wednesday or whatever they were playing it at that time, David Arquette pins WCW president Eric Bischoff. Gosh, WCW sucked back then. but, you know, pins Eric Bischoff in a tag team match and wins the WCW world title and is the WCW champion for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And wrestling fans have despised David Arquette since then. And I guess, you know, 2-3 years ago, Arquette decided he was going to get in the best shape of his life. And he was going to train to become a professional wrestler and do the independent circuit and everything. And it just shows you everything that's going on with that. And Arquette has some alcohol problems. He has some drug issues and stuff, and that's not shied away from in this thing either. So it's very interesting. He seems like a very goofy, lovable, creative guy who is just trying to find an outlet for his creativity. But also trying to, you know, you can tell that he's passionate about pro wrestling, and It's been fun to me to watch him go from undesirable to undeniable as far as professional wrestling goes.
Okay.
Where he was looked at as a pariah and as what killed WCW, 20 years ago. And now pro wrestling fans look at him with at least in my opinion, with a modicum of respect of like, okay, this guy's actually, he's actually gotten trained. He's actually putting in the work. He's actually doing what needs to be done. And he's doing a pretty good job with it. So, yeah.
Okay.
So hats off to David Arquette for that. And if you're, like I said, if you're a fan of either David Arquette or professional wrestling or both, go check out You Cannot Kill David Arquette.
Yeah. Well, I'm a fan of a good documentary, and I am definitely, I've ran out after finishing up I'll Be Gone in the Dark. And so I'm all about that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the fact that you and I both got to finally go back to a movie theater this week.
I mean, man, I feel like the comparison is to my buddy who bought a Ferrari for the first time, and I just got a new Kia. No hate on Kia, just a lot of love for Ferraris. You went to a better theater, you went and saw a better movie. I went to a dump and saw a dump. But other than that, sure, sounds great. Let's do that.
So you, you're the local theater back home, the AMC, what are they calling it now? The Highland 12?
Sure.
Yeah. Or the AMC Cookville 12.
Those 12 are the STDs you get when you sit down.
How did you feel? I mean, how safe did you feel? Well, yeah. I mean, that's a question I'm going to ask, but I know I'm going to get an answer. how safe did you feel? Were there prerequisites to going in? Like, I'm curious to see how they're taking it as opposed to how my theater was taken.
Well, I'm assuming in diminished comparison. So you had to wear a mask coming in, and then they wanted you to keep a mask on anytime you weren't eating concessions. The showing that I saw was a late evening, like the last showing on a Sunday. And so I probably saw 15 total people, including workers in the entire building.
Okay.
In my showing, there were 5 people, including myself, and it was almost a private screening. And so, I mean, I still don't feel like I have a great handle on how the coronavirus is transmitted over distance. Everybody kind of works off this 6 feet thing in stores around here anyway. But I have a loved one who has a touch of emphysema, and that person's lung doctor told them to stay 30 feet away from everyone.
Oh, wow.
And so I don't have a lot of clarity on, what kind of distance is safe distance, particularly in a indoor environment that is running an air conditioning recirculation system. That being said, if it is possible to be safely socially distanced from anyone, we had to be in that showing. And I felt safe from the other people around me. I did not feel safe from the dank, moist environment I watched that movie in. I'm assuming I could catch pneumonia in there before I could catch Rona. That was my experience. Now tell me about the way they pampered you in luxury and Grey Poupon at Alamo Draft House.
Yeah, I mean, I had a full body massage. They had a steamer going in my face the whole time. No.
I wouldn't have believed it. You could have just rolled with it.
Man, I've never felt safer going to a movie than I did on Monday night when I went to watch Tenet. As soon as you walk in, they require you as well to have a mask. If you don't have a mask, they go, hey, no problem. Here's a mask for you. They check your temperature as you walk in the door. They ask you if you have any symptoms. On the website, it says that if at any time while you're there, you start to feel sick, or if you feel sick before you get there, all you got to do is tell them that, and they're going to refund your money and give you a rain check voucher, or refund your money, for your tickets. When you buy your ticket, they block off the seats beside you so that no one can sit next to you or sit close to you, which I want to go ahead and say, let's just do that forever. even if hopefully to God, we're able to get this COVID situation under control and things go back to a sense of normalcy. I still would love it to like buy a ticket and not have to sit by people that I don't want to sit by.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think based on my years of going to movie theaters, that's only fair.
Yeah. Or invoke a odor tax.
Right. Yeah, if we can take temperature, surely we can take odor readings.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that poorly compensated human being working that booth, but it can be done. We have the technology.
Yeah. So you order your food when you order your tickets online. They're not buying tickets at the door anymore. You order your tickets online and you order your food at the same time, which that kind of sucks because I don't know anybody that knows what they're going to want to eat 3 days out or a week out or, you know, whatever the situation is. But it's the least of my concerns. You go in, they double check your order to make sure everything's good. They have it ready for you, within no time. If you want a refill on a soda or water or whatnot, you get it every time in a different glass or in a different, plastic cup. At one point before the movie began, a lady came in and sanitized the handrails. We watched the movie. Of course, the same stuff goes on. No talking, no texting, all that good stuff. And then after the movie was over, I saw a guy that had it looked like a wet vac that was going to go in and like clean the theater. And they talk about how they do like a deep clean, with all the antibacterial stuff that you can do. So, I mean, seriously, man, like, I legitimately have never felt safer from like diseases going to a movie before. And just another reason why Alamo Drafthouse is amazing. And another reason why you and I need to find some kind of investor or, find $100,000 lying on the street somewhere and open one up in Tennessee.
I mean, yeah, I basically had the same experience.
Yeah, 100%.
100%. Talking about movies, I'm assuming your movie was good.
Yeah. So here's the thing, man. I really enjoyed it when I was watching it. But the one thing that I would say is a detriment to the movie, and it is something that I've noticed in several Christopher Nolan movies now, is that the sound was muffled. There's certain times in this thing where you can't really make out what they're saying. And at first I thought, oh, okay, I'm getting old. Like, that was my first inclination. But the thing that I've read online is, there's been two big things, two big criticisms. The first one is it's difficult to understand, and that's true. It is. It took me probably about 45 minutes into the movie to like really understand what was going on. And then after that, it took a couple hours after I got home, like rethinking about the movie to like really understand everything. I'd like to go watch it again, knowing now what I know. And then the second criticism was the sound, because it feels like it's been that way since The Dark Knight Rises. And what I've read about that is that Nolan doesn't seem to care so much about the dialogue as he does making it an immersive experience that people, the people not only see the movie, but they feel the movie and they're a part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And while I get that, you and I both know that dialogue are very important to storytelling.
Yeah. Well, even the stated aim there, if I'm thinking, I can't really understand what they're saying, I'm out of that immersive experience, right? I'm thinking mm-hmm. about the experience rather than experiencing it.
Yeah. And so it's just, there's just several times in this thing where I felt like an old man because I like put my reclining seat down and kind of like put my ear closer to the to the screen. But besides that, man, I think it's a great movie. It's Nolan, so it's trippy and it is a little difficult to understand, but I think it's a good one. And I really enjoyed, I believe his name is John David Washington, which is Denzel Washington's son. Didn't know that. I thought he did a great job. But the guy I was the most impressed with was Robert Pattinson. Yeah.
Okay. Fine. That's fun. I'm not bitter. That's cool.
So how was your movie?
You mean beside the need to take antibiotics while I was watching it?
Yes.
It's not a good movie. I think I'm on a very short list of people who was who were most excited about New Mutants. We've mm-hmm. been talking about that film on this podcast for a long time. I think the idea of a horror movie built in a superhero universe is ready to take place. Brightburn, I think, kind of proved that concept. And then you have this whole Marvel world to do it in with material that invites you to do so. If those of you who read the summary of the Demon Bear Saga comic book series that I posted in the Facebook group, I mean, it's all right there. It almost seems like low-hanging fruit. And they messed all of it up, man. It's the worst Marvel movie I've seen. It's the worst X-Men movie I've seen. I mean, I know superhero movies are really a broad category, but I can tell you for sure it's the worst major franchise superhero movie I've seen. And like, I think people here know how much I hated Superman versus Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this, I guess the best word is political criticism of that film. It's long before you ever consider any of that stuff. It's just a bad movie. It makes sense to me. They didn't want to release it. They tried everything they could to not release it. If there's a better cut out there, they should have released that. It's just choppy. Character motivations are bad. The characters are simplistic stereotypes of teenagers. It seems like the director wasn't primarily interested in telling a compelling story. I don't want to go much further than that, but it seems like there were motivations beyond just making a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it played out. I think people picked up on it in the political criticism. I think people picked up on it in the criticism of the movie as a movie. And so I don't have any desire to comment on any of the political stuff, but it's just a bad movie and it's got a lot of talent in the cast. The source material's rich. It had enough budget to make something happen. And I think the guy's name is Josh Boone. I don't know that you could fail much harder,
man.
I mean, I'm clearly coming from a place of bitterness as a guy who had high expectations or high hopes anyway. But it's just sorry. It's just a sorry movie. There's a good country word to describe it. It's sorry.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it led the box office, which is, you know, it's a weird time. But I don't think there's going to be a lot of people coming back to a second viewing or telling their friends, dude, you got to go watch this movie.
Yeah. Well, that is disappointing.
Yeah. That's exactly my experience. It was disappointing. And I watched it as an idiot because I kept being like, maybe they could come back from this, or maybe they'll pay that off, or maybe there'll be a reason that that thing happened. No, never. It's more choppy as a movie than the literal panels of a comic book. It's just bad. And I'll quit ranting about it, but I really can't think of anything to praise in the movie other than there's real talent working there. And I don't know why the talent was so thwarted. So yeah. Anyway, not a stellar return to the movie theater experience for Jeff Wright.
Well, crap.
It's okay. Me and my 2001 Kia are going to make it.
Oh, man. I can go 0 to 60 in 0.5 seconds in this thing.
I can go 0 to 60 by dropping it off a cliff. Go see Nolan movies at Alamo Draft Houses, and your problems are going to be, maybe I can't hear that as well as I wanted to. That's pretty high class compared to what what the 99% of us out here in the movie going sense are living through, pal. So you just take your privilege and sit in your comfy leather chair. Think about all the rest of us suffering.
Don't mind if I do.
I'm going to basically lead the Occupy Wall Street movement from the Nolan Batman film when they go in the wealthy person's house.
Yeah.
You're going to see me in a torn t-shirt and cut off jeans sitting in a ripped up version of your favorite recliner at the Alamo Draft House in Missouri soon.
You'll think darkness is your ally. Oh, man. Well, I'm finally part of the 1%, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. All right, man. Well, that's all I got. No, any more horror reporter we got?
This has been this week's Horror Report.
This is the part of the show that sucks. Because we kind of pivoted this week and we chose Message from the King, which is not a lead in for us to review Hamilton like I was hoping one day it might be. but it is a 2016 Netflix movie starring the late Chadwick Boseman. And that's the reason that we picked it. Friday night, around, I don't know what, 9:30 probably, the world found out that Chadwick Boseman, age 43, had passed away from stage 4 colon cancer. And I'll tell you, man, we unfortunately lose celebrities a lot, you know. And I guess up until this one, the one that hit me the hardest was Robin Williams.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say that's right. For me, too. You know,
yeah, and we lost Robin 6 years ago in 2014. But, man, I came off the stage in Carterville, Illinois, Friday night after a really weird show. And one of the first things I saw was your text message that you sent me. And not even 5 seconds before that, my feature for the weekend, I looked at her phone and she went, "Oh my God, Chadwick Boseman died." And it took me a second to like understand those words.
Yeah, right.
And then I thought, holy smokes, is it another like Kobe Bryant situation? Because, I mean, never in my mind did I think cancer. And so I just couldn't believe what was going on. And then you sent me the text message that said that he had passed away. And I think in that link you sent me, it said that he passed away from cancer. And I had not seen Chadwick, you know, over the last 3 or 4 months or whatever. Apparently, he put out an Instagram video where he looked very gaunt and sickly. And then he wound up taking it down because people were speculating on stuff. And, you know, he kept this really close to the vest. But, man, I think that this... I think that Chadwick Boseman's death, for me, ranks right up there with Robin Williams. Just an actor that has truly captured the hearts of millions of people, and somebody, in my opinion, that we hadn't seen the best of yet.
No, I'm with you. It's a Ledger-like situation.
Yeah.
And I don't really feel like I have words that are better than the ones that you've said or that have been said elsewhere. It's just the kind of thing that should not happen. And it did. Like so much that we have seen this year. It just, the world shouldn't work this way.
Right. No, absolutely. And it's just really terrible, man. Yeah. And I hate it. And to be 43 years old, you know, not only that, man, but to be 39 years old and to discover that you have colon cancer and then to fight it at the apex of your career. You know, when at a time where his body should start to betray him, he adds more muscle mass and he continues to stay in the best shape of his life. And no one knows the struggle that the man's going. Very rarely, I think, do you learn about somebody that lived within your lifespan. Right. Very rarely do you learn more things about somebody after they're gone that make you respect them more than when they were alive.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I have not thought of that, but that's maybe the most remarkable contrast. We're used to hearing details that make us respect someone less.
Yeah. And, you know, Chadwick, again, you know, he found out that he had this. I mean, the timetable is 2016 when he found out. 2016 is when he, you know, made his debut as the Black Panther in Captain America: Civil War. He goes on to make what, 4 or 5 other movies. The Marvel movies, of course. You know, the Black Panther, and then both Avenger movies. You know, he makes those while he's suffering from this disease. But he's also, you know, he just did. The Five Bloods that was directed by Spike Lee. That's a war movie that's on Netflix right now. You can watch. He did 21 Bridges. He was in a movie called Gods of Egypt that I had never heard of before. He played Thurgood Marshall in 2017's Marshall. And he has a movie coming out at a later date called Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, where he played, you know, where he's in that. And I just read this the other day, Jeff. He was 100% positive that he was going to beat this thing, and he was going to bulk back up and be in perfect shape to start production on Black Panther 2 next year, up until like a week before he passed away.
Oh, man. Dadgum. That's crushing.
Yeah.
That's crushing.
It's just terrible, man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see these pictures of him going to these cancer hospitals and visiting children and, you know, touching their lives, knowing that he essentially is dying. And I found a whole new respect for the man, realizing that in this day and age where information is accessible with the click of a finger, where we seemingly want to air all of our grievances and our dirty laundry and our problems out to the world. So either we can gain, depending on how you feel about it, you can gain prayer or you can gain sympathy or you whatever the situation is, attention, what have you. Here's a man who is no doubt about it, one of the A-list celebrities due to this Black Panther phenomenon that has happened. And he does not try to garner sympathy. He does not try to garner attention. He just goes out. He deals with this sickness to the best of his ability. Only his close, like, friends and family know about it. And kudos to them for keeping it secret, man.
Yeah, that's another startling aspect. It just feels like nothing stays secret anymore.
Yeah. And, like, kudos to those people in his life that love him enough to not want to make a quick buck from the Inquirer or TMZ or, you know, whatever we want to talk about now. But he goes through all of this in secret and then ultimately, you know, doesn't get the ending he deserved.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, I'm assuming there's tons of listeners who have loved ones who didn't get the ending they deserved. And I mean, that works in a couple different ways. Obviously, the most tragic is the actual death of people this year. But, you know, the various restrictions and whatnot, you can't have funerals, or if you have a funeral, only 10 people can be there. I mean, you can't get the ending you want is a major theme of 2020. I hate that we now add Chadwick Boseman's name to that file.
Yeah, I agree. Chadwick was born and raised in Anderson, South Carolina, and there is now, I love this, there is now a change.org petition in South Carolina for, they want to replace the Confederate statues in South Carolina with a statue of Chadwick Boseman.
Hmm.
There's apparently a Confederate monument in Anderson, and they want to tear that down and put up a statue of Boseman. And I actually signed it. I thought it was great. And it's apparently it is already collected more than 50,000 signatures. They were going for 15,000, and it's already, you know, almost quadrupled that. He attended Howard University. If you've seen, there's this really great video that I posted on my personal Facebook page of Jimmy Fallon. Occasionally will get a celebrity in a room and they will bring in fans of whatever the thing is. You know, he did one with Tina Fey and when Mean Girls was on Broadway, but he did one with Chadwick and Black Panther. And he had these people of color come into the room and talk about how much the Black Panther movie means to them. And then Chadwick was right behind the curtain. And so then he would pop out and meet these people. And one of the young ladies went, "H-U?" And she was a Howard alumni as well. But yeah, so he went to Howard University and obviously studied acting. He studied directing. He has a Bachelor of Fine Arts in directing. One of his teachers was actually Felicia Rashad, who became a mentor to him. And he had an opportunity to attend Oxford Midsummer Program at the British American Drama Academy in London. Didn't have the money to do the courses and to go to London. So Felicia Rashad makes a phone call to her friend Denzel Washington, and Denzel paid for Chadwick to go to this this class for the semester over at the British Academy, which I just thought was a really cool little tidbit.
Yeah.
You know, and then from there, we got to see Chadwick first and foremost on an episode of Third Watch. That's where he got his first television role. Then he actually got on, I didn't know this, but he actually got on in 2003, the daytime soap opera All My Children, He didn't last long. He says that he was fired after voicing concerns to producers about racist stereotypes in the script. So they let him go and they recast him with Michael B. Jordan.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he got some bit roles and stuff. But of course, the first thing I remember him being in was the movie about Jackie Robinson, 42. And I have a cool kind of story about 42. They shot some of that in Chattanooga.
Really?
Yeah. And they were asking for extras and stuff and people that knew how to play baseball and whatnot. And I sent my stuff in and got a call back for it, but I couldn't get the day off work to go shoot.
Hmm.
For 42. But there are some of my friends that actually got to be like, you know, people in the stands and stuff while they shot there, which is pretty neat. But yeah, he played Jackie Robinson in that. As a matter of fact, he did such a great job with it that Jackie's widow, Rachel Robinson, said that it was just like Jackie was back, which I think is, you know, the coolest compliment you can give somebody that's trying to portray a man like that. Did you ever see Get On Up? Did you get to see 42?
No, I don't like baseball. And so I have always found a reason to like, I may own that movie, in fact, because yeah. Everybody I know loves it. But, I've always found a reason to like watch something else, but yeah. I'm going to watch it this weekend with my kids.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it. I knew that you didn't like baseball, so I'd wondered if you had ever watched it or not, but. I think it's a good movie. And you know, and crazy how time loops the way that it does. It's apt. It's, you know, it's appropriate for situations that we're going through right now in the world. Then he plays James Brown in Get On Up, which I haven't got to see that. And I'm going to try to track that down sometime this weekend or next time I get some time off. You know, and then in 2016, he starts playing T'Challa, and I'm very lucky to say that, you know, we have four movies with Chadwick being T'Challa. Of course, with Endgame, he's not in it a lot, but he's still in it. To me, and this is coming again from, in my opinion, the world's biggest Robert Downey Jr. fan, he steals the entire movie in Civil War.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And, you know, after you see that, I was just pumped to see him in Black Panther. And then, of course, 2018, that movie comes out and becomes a cultural phenomenon. And the thing that I felt the most sorry for him about was, you know, sometimes you would see pictures of him doing the Wakanda Forever with just the saddest look in his eyes. And, you know, at that time you're thinking like, oh, I'm sure he's just tired from having to do Wakanda Forever for every freaking person in the world, you know. But now you look at it and you go, man, I bet that was some of those times where he was like dealing with chemo or, you know, dealing with the surgery or whatever the situation is. His whole thing, man, is it just shows you like you can't judge a book by its cover. You know, I talked about he made a video on his Instagram earlier this year and people noticed how small he had gotten. And instead of thinking like, oh, that's not good, he looks bad. People were making jokes like, oh, look at the crack panther and how cracked out he was. And it just breaks my heart that like that's what we go to in those situations now.
Remember that a few minutes ago you told us about a horror movie of the monster that lives on the other side of the screen.
Boom. Yeah. And you know, like I said before, it got so bad that he just took the video down. And it just goes to show you, and this is the opposite of what this podcast is, but it just goes to show you, I think it's a great life lesson that we can all take, is like, don't just be nice to people, man.
Seems pretty simple.
Yeah. You just never know what people are going through. And if somebody slights you, once, or you know, and I don't mean slight and like take advantage of you or something, but if the lady at the grocery store isn't nice to you, or if, you know, situations like that, don't take it so personal and just try to treat people with respect and try to be as nice to people as possible. Well, you just never know.
I think with Bozeman, everything you just said, they're super reasonable.
Yeah.
But with Bozeman on that video, we're past even that. Like he wasn't doing anything to actively impose anything on anyone, right? If the woman at the counter is rude to you, I'm with you. Like it's a great turn to say, I'll just choose to not return in kind, that same energy, you know? Mm-hmm. But the guy released an Instagram video. He didn't cut you off in traffic. He wasn't rude to you in the checkout line. He released an Instagram video. If we can't rise to the level of returning kindness for insult, could we rise to the level of not returning goodwill, you know, with insult?
Yeah.
He just put a video out, man.
Yeah. It's just
quit looking to dunk on people.
Yeah. That's it, man. That's it. That's exactly what I was about to say too. It's insane to me how we love to build people up in this society, but even more than that, we love to tear people down in this society now. So when you see somebody like that, like a Chadwick Boseman, who again has become this cultural hero, or pop culture hero for that matter, and then you see he's a little different. Oh man, I can't wait to make a snarky comment about this to get those, you know, 15 likes on this Instagram comment that I'm making. It's just a weird. How many times have we said it, Jeff? We live in weird times, and I hate it.
Because, I mean, we live in trashy times in terms of human interactions. And look, I am a guy who's willing to scrap. I mean, it's not like if somebody is insulting to me, I'm happy to say I don't appreciate that. And I'm also not going to just stand here and take it. Particularly if my family or someone I care about is involved, I get being frustrated and not letting people walk all over you. I do think the higher vision is to say, I'm actually going to be above your insult and return kindness for ill as much as possible. I think that's the better model, but I live lower than that very often in my own conduct. I just don't get how anybody wants to live in a world to be the kind of person who just sees another individual as a chance to build their own brand through cynicism, criticism, and mockery. That's just ugly. And, I don't know, you know, that sort of the cheesy thing that gets said at funerals is the world didn't deserve this person. Maybe that Instagram video and story kind of illustrates that the world just wasn't good enough for Chadwick.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think everybody, I have theological convictions about anthropology. I think that everybody has darkness within them to some degree or the other. I think that's kind of unavoidable in human history. And even people, when you're honest about your experience of yourself, you know that to be true. But comparatively, Chadwick was one of the good ones, man. And if this is how we're going to treat him, I don't know. It's just such an indictment of us as a culture.
Yeah, I agree, man. Matter of fact, just to show you that it's not all just internet trolls or whatnot, Chadwick Boseman's co-star Clark Peters on the set of Defy Bloods talked about how he regrets judging him. I guess Clark's wife asked what Chadwick was like, and Clark had been excited to work with Chadwick, and he said, well, I think he's a little bit precious. And his wife asked why. And he said, well, because he's just surrounded by people who are fawning over him all the time. He said he has a Chinese practitioner who is massaging his back when he walks off set. He has his makeup lady massaging his feet. His girlfriend's there holding his hand. He said, and the whole time I was thinking maybe this whole Black Panther thing just went to his head. And, he kind of got choked up while he was talking about it. He said, I just regret even having those thoughts because everyone was just trying to take care of him.
Right.
And, again, man, it's just sad. It's just sad that we think the worst of people.
Well, I'll just say, since I've been kind of negative here, kudos to that gentleman for self-examining and owning his error and publicly kind of publishing his error. I think that I screwed up is virtually lost in public discourse, at least high profile individuals. And
yeah.
It's not like, I don't think it would be a lot different for low profile people. They just don't have the high profile.
Right.
The ability to stand up and say, I really screwed that up. I'm sorry. Unless it's sort of at the hands of a social media mob, that's the only time we ever see it. And it's nice to hear someone say, gosh, I goofed that up and kind of do it of their own self-evaluation. You know what I mean? Like, it's nice to see the contrast there that they didn't do it because a mob was screaming at them.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So anyway, man, I mean, that is pretty much everything I wanted to say about Mr. Bozeman, before we get into the movie. It really has, man. It's taken a toll. I mean, you know, I talk a lot about The Rock and Robert Downey Jr. And, you know, we talked about Sam Rockwell earlier and stuff. And I wouldn't say that Chadwick Boseman was one of my favorite actors, but I loved him as the Black Panther.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've always enjoyed everything that I've ever seen him in. I hate that we lost him. I hate that we lost him so young, and I hate that this is the way that it happens. And it's just a tragic, tragic thing. Of course, you know, he passed away Friday, surrounded by his family and his new wife.
Oh man.
You know, they just got married again in secret. I guess they were engaged in October of last year. I'm not sure when they were married, but clearly, you know, not even a year. And he was married to a singer named Taylor Simone Ledward, whom I've never heard of before. And that may be because I'm old, but yeah, I just, man, like I said, it sucks and I hate it. I wish it wasn't true.
For sure. For sure.
But, you know, it's, I guess the one thing you can think about it is that in this day and age where it seems like that everyone wants to argue with everybody about everything, this was something that the world could come together in agreement on. And, it sucks that it took someone dying to give us a little bit of peace for an evening on that front. So, on behalf of us here at the Solace of the Scary podcast, we just want to say rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman and thank you for your art. And, as a matter of fact, while we've been recording this podcast, I've had Black Panther playing in the background, just, on mute, just kind of watching it and enjoying it. And, you know, eventually you and I can come on here and nerd out about whatever they decide to do with Black Panther 2. But right now, I don't feel like that's even something to talk about. But anyway, let's get to the big reason why we're here. 2016's Message from the King. You can find this on Netflix. And before we get into it, Wahlberg.
What? No.
Spoiler alert.
All right, Maine. Let's talk about this thing.
It is Black Panther Taken.
Yep. And that's our show. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful evening.
I don't know that this is much more than your standard fair action movie, you know, solo revenge project action movie.
Mm-hmm.
But you can almost see the pitch where they're like, look, you worked hard and got a killer African accent while you were working with Marvel. Let's do that again.
So that's actually wrong.
Oh, no. I can't believe that I'm wrong.
Chadwick talked about in an interview that he based the accent that he uses for the Black Panther on a film that he was working on where he plays a man from South Africa. So I guess that this movie in the timeline came before he started doing Black Panther.
Well, never mind. I really thought, I was like, well, of course. I mean, you develop, like Taken, you spend a lifetime developing these particular set of skills and
right.
You use them, you know?
Yeah.
But man, even there's a scene where he walks up to the car wash, I think for the first time to confront the gangsters who are kind of around Zico.
Yeah.
And that walk, man, it just looked like his Black Panther character. You know, because Black Panther has a sort of feline walk when he's playing that character. The claws are, they're not forward facing, but you see them. And I was like, dude, we just need a CGI bodysuit. And this is a Black Panther movie. In fact, if this were like set between, you know, when he did whatever he drinks to lose all the Black Panther powers and when he gets them back. It almost perfectly slots in as a side mission.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what would happen if Shuri was killed in Black Panther.
I mean, I think he would rain technological Wakandan death on those people.
Yeah.
But like if he went through a Tony Stark arc where he was cut out of, you know, his resources, then yes. Then mm-hmm. He goes and buys a bike chain.
Yeah. Yeah. This is if Wakanda really was the third world country. Ravaged by poverty. That's what would happen. Was it difficult for you to watch this movie after, you know, finding out about what happened on Friday?
You know, honestly, I don't think so. I think I enjoyed it maybe a little bit more. Again, the movie itself is, there's some really compelling parts of it. And you do get a little bit of like, man, we should have gotten more from Chadwick. But here's what I know after Friday. The guy worked really hard to be the best at his craft he could be, even while dealing with a debilitating illness. That clearly indicates he wanted to put his best performance on the record. This stuff mattered to him. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see Chadwick, who at least appeared to be in good health, doing something that was clearly important to him and doing a really good job at it. So I think it heightened my enjoyment to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that too. I think now though, it's kind of like with Heath Ledger, every movie that I watch that I haven't got to see Chadwick Boseman do, every movie now, when it gets towards the end of it, I'm going to get a little sad because I know that this is the last time that I'll see this for the first time. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And I just, man, what could have been? I mean, that dude, he and Tom Holland were set to just lead Marvel for the next 10 years. It may be even longer than that because I think people, not only people of color, but I think like everybody loved Black Panther.
I'm with you. You mentioned Winter Soldier earlier. So Winter Soldier and Black Panther are my favorite Marvel movies. And I realized, oh, yeah, Chadwick's in both of those.
Yeah. You know,
features prominently. Yeah. He's super important.
So I do think that this is a very run-by-the-numbers type of revenge action flick. I don't think it's as good if Chadwick Boseman's not in it. I thought that... And this is something I very rarely say, but I thought that Alfred Molina was trying to be like the most campy villain ever. Like he felt real overacty to me. Did it feel that way to you, or is it just me?
Well, I was wondering why they had him in the role.
Yeah.
Until the bedroom scene. And I think he did a pretty good job there. I will tell you this, the videotape that it's the heart of like why the sister was killed is the closest I ever want to come to that kind of video. I mean, like sick to my stomach, you know, just seeing the little bit that was displayed in this film. And I realized like they need Molina to be the monster who thinks he's a decent person. And I thought it kind of paid off in that scene in the bedroom, you know, where he has that interaction with Chadwick's character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was rough.
I mean, every good revenge film has to do a good job of making you hate the people who are getting what's coming to them.
Yeah.
And this one, I mean, it checked that box. It left me in the shower, but it checked that box. You are quite happy to see justice meted out in this way.
Yeah. I thought Luke Evans did a great job, you know, playing the smarmy dentist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
And I was very impressed with Teresa Palmer, who played Kelly, the call girl who winds up being the love interest in the movie.
Yeah, I initially thought, she's just peripheral. She's there as like, I mean, literally to give him the car, you know what right. I mean? But the scene at the diner or whatever was really poignant. And I really do think like it felt like a decent person trapped in deplorable circumstances. Mm-hmm. In a way that would have felt, I think, with a lesser actress as their effort to really cement themselves as an actress, if that makes sense.
And yeah, absolutely.
So she drew me in. The only criticism I have for that character at all is that when King is beating a guy to death in your living room, maybe take your daughter in the next room.
Yeah. You
know, maybe just do what he says and take her to the bedroom.
Yeah, nobody was a real good parent in this movie.
No. I mean, I know she's trying.
Right.
She's trying, but just get the girl out of the room.
Yeah, try a little harder.
we're not asking too much. It's like the door behind you, just go through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Golly. I know we spent a lot of time talking about Chadwick Boseman and not a lot of time talking about this movie. And I know that's usually not what we do, but I mean, there's really not a lot to say about this thing. I feel like that it's a movie that if you've seen Taken, mm-hmm. then you've probably seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that this is a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that it's that same formulaic type of thing.
Yeah. It's just not particularly new.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing felt groundbreaking in this, or even, you know, off the paint by numbers. Like this is Black Panther meets John Wick meets Taken.
Yeah, that's right. I think you'll probably disagree with me on this, but I mean it in praise of this movie generally. We just reviewed Relic on our Patreon feed, and Relic is not as good a movie as Message from the King.
Mm-hmm.
But Relic does attempt something different, right? And mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of different for different's sake, but I appreciate what Relic is attempting to do.
Sure.
Even if it doesn't measure up and live up to it. Message from the King is something that I would have paid money to go see this summer at a local movie theater if we had summer blockbusters. I'd 100% rather watch this than some of the blockbusters that I have paid to go see.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that movie. It's the cookie cutter approach with some different cultural elements. I mean, that's kind of what they shuffle. And those cultural elements are interesting, but even those different cultural elements, we don't get a ton of time with. We get the scene of Chadwick riding in the police truck, and then we get the flashback to the kids playing soccer. And if anything, I'd almost like to see this set in Africa instead of LA.
Yeah. I thought the same thing, man. I thought if you want to make this a little bit different to where it stands out more, that's what you do with it.
I mean, we have had these kind of movies set in South America, you know, Mexico. I don't know that I've seen one set in, I can't remember, it's not Cape Town. But anyway, that part of the world. And I would have been interested in that, but I'm also assuming that Netflix spent their money getting Chadwick Boseman and not moving a film production to Africa.
Well, I think that Netflix bought the rights to this. I don't think that they made it.
Okay, so was this something he did?
Let's see. I'm not for sure. It says after playing in festivals and small venues for a few years, Netflix decided to acquire the film because I think they just bought. I think this thing just came out on Netflix maybe last year or maybe even the beginning of this year.
Hmm.
But they made it in 2016. There is a Belgium director whose name I will not attempt. but he's the one that, like I said, directed it. It is written by Oliver Butcher and Stephen Cornwell. Let's see. Chadwick is an executive producer on the movie.
Okay. So he had a financial stake in it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he made this movie before, you know, he did Civil War or like right after Civil War. I don't know, but, I mean, clearly they didn't have a big budget or, you know, a big enough budget to make this thing go to Africa. it looks like, well, you know what? I say that, and then here are these numbers, Jeff, right? $10 million estimated budget.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. $10 million estimated budget. It made $30,952 at the United Arab Emirates its opening weekend, and the worldwide gross has been $315,132.
Wow.
But of course, Netflix bought it, so I'm sure they made all that money back.
I assume so. I don't want to like pick a fight with Chris Hemsworth, but clearly Chris Hemsworth, Jeremy Renner were in a pipeline to like become. I don't think we have leading men the way we did with Arnold and Sylvester and Mel Gibson back in the day.
Tom Hanks.
Right. We don't really have that now. The Rock and Ryan Reynolds are like as close as we can come, and they're really close. They're just not. They're not the guaranteed opener.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were, you know, there have been efforts to get Chris Hemsworth to do that. Before that, there was Jeremy Renner. Neither one of those have taken off super well. Both those guys do even better. They do their best in a Marvel franchise.
Yeah.
I look at this and I'm like, man, Chadwick could be that guy. This is like proof of concept. You can build a movie around him, let him carry it. He's got the chops and the range. He's got believable physicality. He could have been it. And that's another thing robbed in his death. It's a lesser thing compared to the dignity of his life. But it's a robbery nonetheless for those of us who were fans.
Yeah. I feel like that Chadwick – I want to be careful how I say this. I feel like that Chadwick had the – agenda is such a – it can be a negative word, but you understand what I'm saying on this. I think that Chadwick's agenda in his career was to promote black stories that other people wouldn't do.
Hmm. Yeah, that seems reasonable looking at his IMDb.
Yeah, I mean, Jackie Robinson, Marshall Thurgood, James Brown, you know, even this. And then, of course, you know, with Black Panther, like I feel like that. And obviously and honestly, that's we live in a day and age where black stories need to be told, where black voices need to be heard. And so I think that that's where his mindset was on this. But I also think that he had enough talent and charisma and goodwill that he could do black stories like that and put them in the mainstream. You know, like it seemed like the only real big movie he had was Black Panther that was like that open to a large scale. Everything else seems like small independent movies. And I think that he could have translated that into, hey, let's do these movies on a grander scale, you know, about these black heroes or about a black story. And let's, you know, and let's make it as big as Black Panther. And I feel like that may be the most disheartening part about it all is that we won't be able to have that.
Yeah. And that's really good analysis. I think you can just be disheartened that we don't get more from Chadwick Boseman. I guess I'm stuck in that loop of thinking through what he means as a bankable actor, which is not clearly the defining element of his worth, but maybe it dovetails with your point that we just need people who are able to tell stories we're interested in to engage with perspectives we don't normally do so.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about Chadwick Boseman's roles that I love the most, they are very restrained. And it plays in this too. Like T'Challa is a king in dignified fashion, and that means he is not the wild man that Thor is by contrast. You know what I mean? Like when you think of Thor, even though he's royal, you don't really think of him as having royal dignity. When Boseman plays King T'Challa, you're like, yep, that's a king. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it is more with it's something to do with being restrained, not being overly animated. But the thing that this movie reminds me of is that he's incredibly charismatic with just his facial expression, or that he can do more delivering a line in a fairly monotone way than I think a lot of people do with, you know, trying to go for the delivery with all they've got. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is, but when we talk about people who have it where they are arresting when they're in front of you, I think Chadwick Boseman had that. And I don't know how to quantify it, but he had it. And for his own purposes and just my enjoyment, I wish we had more of it.
Yeah, I do too, man. I do too. Again, I hate that we're not spending a lot of time on this movie, but I mean, seriously, I'm going to tell you to watch this movie. There's not a lot of horror elements to this, but you know, when we started talking about like, hey, how are we going to honor Chadwick Boseman on this week's episode? We thought about just reviewing Black Panther. You know, we've gone into the sci-fi genre before with in the superhero genre for that matter before with with Batman and Robin. But also, you know, we did the 10-year retrospective on The Dark Knight. But I Googled Chadwick Boseman horror just to see if there was anything that I hadn't heard of. And this movie came up and it reminded me that gore equals horror to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there is some gore in this movie.
Yeah, there is. And in a way that actually rattled me. I'm not saying it like kept me up at night, but I had a proportionate but nonetheless similar response to the seeing his sister's body.
Yeah.
That character did. Again, proportionate as a viewer, but it weirded me out.
Yeah, and it did me too. And every time that they would flash back to it, it would bother me.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you would do. You would lay down and close your eyes and you would see your sister in that form and what led her there. So you know, this movie, we've called it paint by numbers and it's kind of typical and some of that stuff, but it's not like it's a simplistic movie. What it's trying to do, the model it's trying to play, it plays really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Anything else that you want to talk about with this thing?
No, I think there's not a lot more that can be said. Maybe our listeners will tell us otherwise. And so we have a Facebook group, we have Twitter, we have Reddit, and all kinds of different ways you can reach out to us. I'd love to talk to people more about this and see what we didn't cover. But nonetheless, I feel like we've kind of hit the strokes on this film because it is a rinse and repeat, just a really good version of it. And one that proves more was on the table with Chadwick Boseman as a lead man.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the best way to describe this movie is it's a simple story with a solid script and an incredible leading man.
Sure. Glad to co-sign that.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, let's get to it then, man. First off, did we see something scary?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, I was grossed out. I was like, this movie actually kind of provoked some empathy in me because I don't think about people living in the struggle in LA. I tend to see LA in my mind as somebody who's never visited there, kind of the glamour town. So actually the movie made me think a little, but I don't think it scared me.
Yeah. I don't think it scared me either, but it did give me like a visceral reaction to those two parts of the movie that we talked about already, the coroner scene with the sister and the video with Alfred Molina and the child. They were those were things that I wasn't ready for in this movie.
Yeah.
But as far as like your normal scares or scary stuff, I don't think that's it. But it is going to invoke some emotions in you, not just because, you know, we just lost Chadwick Boseman, but just this movie will invoke rage.
Sure.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put this?
I'm just going to say 6, not as okay. a criticism. It's just it is what we've talked about it, and it's a very good version of it. So I'm going to go 6.
I'm going to say 6.5. Again, simple story, good script, great, great leading man. So that'll do it. So that's us. Jeff already told you where you can find us, and you know, hit us up if you have differing opinions. We would love to hear them. Or if you have more to say about this movie, we would love to hear from you as well on all of those channels, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Instagram, all that good stuff. So make sure and hit us up there. You can check us out on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. If you'll do us a favor and go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review, that helps the algorithm and allows more movie lovers and horror movie lovers to discover our podcast and to grow the revolution even more than that. And then, of course, if you do want to hear that wonderful review of the movie Relic, that is a Patreon-only review, and you can do that by going to patreon.com/scarypodcast and signing up for that. We've got 4 different tiers. All of them are very beneficial, and we thank you for your support. He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo, and we are out of time. Sorry that this was a little more morose than other podcasts, but we just felt the need to pay tribute to a man who's gone too soon, and that sucks. But we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Do we know what we're doing next week?
Maybe Poltergeist.
Ooh, yeah. Is it? Are we at 150?
We are at 150, I believe, sir.
Well, yeah. It's about time to call Craig T. Nelson and fire that bad boy up. So let's just make that executive decision. Episode 150 is next week, and we're doing Poltergeist, and I'm excited about that. So until next week, thank you guys so much for listening. Wakanda forever. Bye-bye, man.